War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, 18 December, the year of our Lord, 2019. It's episode 78. We're live from Capitol Hill on a beautiful day. We broke the chain of three straight very grim days of rain and overcast. We're live on the John Frederick Radio Network, nationwide on the Salem Radio Network. We're streaming throughout the world on americasvoice.net and also on cable TV on the fastest growing news cable operation, Chris Reddy's Newsmax, now in 70 million homes. Raheem Kassam, Nigel Farage's wingman, one of the architects of both the rise of UKIP and Brexit, and Jason Miller, the chief communication strategist for the 2016 Trump campaign come from behind and also the transition. And we're now honored to be joined today by two guests. The first will be Gillian Tett. She is a editor at large for the Financial Times of London, as everybody knows, my favorite paper we talk about every day, the party at Davos's rag. And she's also a columnist that writes on both financial markets, the economy, and also anthropology. And we asked her to join us today because this is a historic day. We finally got here. Somebody said 10 weeks ago on the John Frederick Radio Show, as sure as the turning of the earth, at some time before Christmas, Nancy Pelosi is going to bring a couple of articles of impeachment against Donald J. Trump. The irony is, in the as divided we were in the Nixon and the Reagan years, really the beginning of this intense partisanship was the impeachment of William Jefferson Clinton, which would be 21 years ago tomorrow. And today we've arrived at the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. This show has been 7 days a week for the last, 8 or 10 weeks. And we're going to be here until the day after his acquittal, sometime in mid to late January, as it looks right now. Raheem and Jason, thank you very much. I want to turn to Jane. Jane, the reason we're so honored to have you here on this historic day, because 100 years from now, as they said in the Washington Post and Politico, people are going to look to this day, and hopefully our voices will be heard. Put it in perspective, because you're in the U.S. edition of the Financial Times, but you bring a really understanding of the world. Where do you think America is politically to have come to this event to actually impeach a president for only the third time in the history of our republic?
Well, Steve, I should start off by saying that I fundamentally disagree with many aspects of what you stand for, but I also do believe in open minds and listening. And I think that's a very important precept to say right now, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg said it extremely well on Monday night in New York, that the Constitution basically has the House proposing impeachment and has the Senate trying. And to be a trier, you have to listen to the evidence and you have to not prejudge everything beforehand. And I think that what is a tragedy, as we've written in the FT, is that this has become very partisan, one-sided. And from the bottom of my heart, I hope that we have a chance to actually try and listen to the evidence without prejudging, because Americans' constitution and legal system is based on the idea of free evidence discussion and essentially people not prejudging until the evidence has been aired.
And so you would think today, if this is the grand jury element in the trial, you would be an advocate of a full trial, fact witnesses, bring it all before not just the American people in the Senate, but really before the people of the world and actually have a real trial.
Well, what we have said at the FT is that it will be a farce if the whole thing is prejudged before and there's a quick, short show trial in January without a proper discussion and open debate.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think a full trial is better for everyone. I happen to believe that it's better for the president. And I believe that you have to have fact witnesses that go back to how this whole thing began. Back to 2013, back to the Maidan Revolution, back to when Hunter Biden started sitting on the board of Burisma. I think all of those.
But you want to go back to the logic, since this is really the interagency consensus versus Donald Trump's America First thing, which is now we have a policy debate like we talked about we wanted to have. Let's go back and get to the roots of it. Let's go back to 2013, 2014. Let's go to what Brussels wanted to do about the Ukraine and the European Union.
Ukraine and NATO. Establish motive. Right.
Is this because, and let's talk about today, is this because it's so solidified and so, Gillian talked about the proposal versus the trying. Is it we're so locked in today in this highly partisan
that there are going to be no votes in the Republican side. And most importantly, I think in the 10 weeks of the show and with others, we went from President Trump saying it was a perfect call and the pattern of what he did before it was perfect, but 85% of Republican, at least elected officials, saying, hey, it wasn't great, but it's not impeachable, to now, today, there's a phalanx. It's locked in. It was a perfect call.
Yeah, and I think just taking a step back, that it's tough to put the genie back in the bottle as far as the let's take the partisanship out of this and say, you know, let's just go and do an examination of what's in front of us, when the genie never was in the bottle. And you start off with Schiff's speakeasy and the way that the unconstitutional manner in which this whole thing was started. I mean, look, when you see the magazine broadcast shows this morning, the CBSs, the CNNs, everybody, this is asterisk day. This is the historic stamping on the Trump presidency to say that he is in this camp of presidents who've been impeached. And I would say, Steve, we always talk about the nullification process of this presidency. I don't think this is just a nullification of President Trump's presidency. I think this is nullification on the votes of 63 million Americans.
Do you buy, and I want to flip to Julian in a second, do you buy the meme that's out there, this is a historic day, this will live with Trump forever? Because the mainstream media is driving that, that this day is not only historic, this is a mark that will, even if the trial comes out okay, this is a mark that will not leave him.
So I think that's the stamp that many in the media want to put on today, but obviously it's far too early to say how big this will be historically. My prediction is that years down the road, people will look to this and say this was the epitome of the tumultuous partisanship that we're seeing in this period. But look, the fact of the matter is President Trump's numbers have gotten better during this impeachment. And if you think back to 21 years ago when Bill Clinton was being impeached, they were cowering up in the fetal position. President Trump's going to have a rally tonight. The day the articles of impeachment are being voted out, he's going to have 10,000 people with 10,000 outside on the day he's being impeached.
Do you think it rises to the level, this is a major historical thing, the Trump presidency always be remembered by this day?
I think it is a pretty historical moment, but I hope that it carries on being a historical moment in terms of reverting to the Constitution and, as I say, essentially having an open debate, discovery process, and ability for the triers to try properly. And again, I would strongly echo the words of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which is the absolute tragedy of Washington and the country as a whole is that there is extreme levels of partisanship and tribalism now, which is really impeding sensible political functioning or sensible political debate. I would say that a lot of the far right has done a lot to whip that up, partly through, you know,
War Room shows. Impeachment.
Well, exactly.
Warroom.org.
I'm not laying the charge exclusively at.
By the way, we wear it as a badge of honor. Bring it.
Well, I think that is extremely bad for American democracy.
Here's one of the reasons we want to have you back on later. The most important thing that's come out here recently is the Afghanistan papers, which shows you the Washington consensus, it shows you the party at Davos, it shows you the international rules-based order, and who actually pays for that, and the lies and the misrepresentations that go into that. That is why Donald Trump's in office, because of the fight of the American people to stop the managed decline. And that, to me, what this debate about, and that's why we are proud to be right-wingers, that we think that that's bringing an element of truth to this.
Well, as I say, I believe in open debate, open minds. I believe in talking to everybody. That's part of what we do as a basic journalist, come anthropologist, and listen. And I think there are many areas of hypocrisy in public life which have been very strong in recent years, which is good to expose. On the issue of Afghanistan, for what it's worth, I've been strongly aware of the hypocrisies in the Afghanistan war because I did my PhD around the edges of it and saw the tragedy of that country up front. But as I say, I don't think, unlike you, Steve, that extreme polarization and partisanship right now is a good thing for the country.
I only would say that presidents like Lincoln and Roosevelt and Reagan only look like uniters in history. At the time, they're so disruptive. A civil war, a World War II, a taking on the Russians. Only in hindsight are the great presidents looked at as uniters. At the time, it's highly partisan and highly divisive.
And well, the key question is how you then respond to victory and how you respond to crisis and whether you actually move forward by trying to bring a nation together rather than divide them. And I would argue in many ways...
Well, we're still in the fight. We're still in the fight. We haven't won yet. We'll unite after Real quickly, we only got about a minute left or less than a minute left. How do you think... Tell us internationally, how is this being viewed? The Financial Times is the financial paper of the world. In other capitals, how do you think this is being viewed today of what we're going through here?
I think it's the latest round of a long-running soap opera, which is not well understood internationally. But many people look at the behavior of the president in the last 3 years and are fairly appalled for reasons that have nothing to do with what's on trial, essentially, today and in January. But certainly it's not helping America's standing in the world at all.
Gillian Tett is one of the editors of the Financial Times, and we always love the Financial Times. I think it's the best paper in the world. If we don't agree with its editorial page all the time and it doesn't agree with us, Raheem, warroom.org?
Yep, warroom.org. Lots of breaking news up there. Make sure you check it out. Subscribe to the podcast and the newsletter.
We're going to have some scoops. This is War Room Impeachment, episode 78. Raheem, Jason, myself return in just a second.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. It's 18 December, year of our Lord, 2019, episode 78, live from Capitol Hill. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, Gillian Tett from the Financial Times are just with us. Governor Jan Brewer, one of the earliest of the Trump advocates, is going to be joining us in the next in the second half of the show. Jason, let's reset. What's the importance of the day, the gravity of the day? How will this day be remembered?
Well, long term, I think ultimately it's going to be how the impeachment vote ends up and how President Trump's 2020 reelection is what's going to determine the gravity of today. But look, the media today has started off by saying President Trump is the third president to have the scarlet eye burned into their forehead. And that is, you really see this rush by the media to go and say, yes, there's the historical aspect of the vote, but to go and try to brand or negate President Trump's presidency.
And he's branding them with Andrew Johnson, with Richard Nixon, and with Bill Clinton, who are all considered not great, not in the level of Lincoln and Roosevelt and Reagan.
Right. And so what the media is trying to do is trying to carve President Trump's image on the side of a impeachment Mount Rushmore, so to speak, when in reality, if President Trump is able to get reelected and keep on with these good policy successes, they'll have to go and carve him in as the fifth member of the current Mount Rushmore.
Raheem, what do you think that we sit with this today?
Look, I mean, this is an exclusive club that the president is joining today, a very exclusive club, and therefore it is an historic day. It is a monumental day, but it's not one of those days where I think, again, looking at the letter that President Trump sent yesterday, the 6-page letter to Nancy Pelosi, I don't think it's one of those days that we've ever seen what a reaction is going to be like from a president like President Trump. You know, Bill Clinton had a very distinct way of dealing with it. There's no precedent to show us how
he curled up. He essentially curled up in a ball, didn't he?
Absolutely, and shielded himself away from it. This president is tackling it head on and tackling it on Twitter right now, you know, in the morning, firing off a volley of tweets and retweets. You know, we live in a new social media driven age. This president was the first president really to leverage that to launch him into office. I mean, you know, you had Barack Obama using some Facebook tricks and things like this, but this president communicated directly with the American public via his Twitter feed, and I suspect nothing different will occur today.
Let's go back to that. Combative. When we started this, I said as sure as the turning of the earth, sometime before Christmas, Nancy Pelosi will bring a couple of articles of impeachment and impeach him. It seemed like both the president and even his followers, which are our listeners, were slow to grasp that reality in September when Nancy Pelosi threw down. How is that, and do you think that's been turned around and you see that manifested, that then will blow through, that will take through the trial and then take through the 2020 campaign?
Yeah, I mean, Raheem is exactly right when he says that we're in completely uncharted waters here. I mean, and going back to the fact that President Trump is having a rally tonight at the same time these articles of impeachment are being passed out of the House. I mean, that in itself is a historic split-screen presidency that we've never, I mean, and when you think about the framers and the founders of the United States, of course, there is no such thing as a split-screen presidency because they didn't have the screens, but having this epic of a divide in the country. But what President Trump has done is this is essentially what he's always done, which is run headfirst into the problem, swinging and punching and saying, I'm going to fight my way out of this. And I think it's been important for him to do that so his supporters and his allies know, again, keep the party together, like you say, unity, and then substance. He did nothing wrong.
Is it a coincidence that probably the best 2 weeks from a results point of view and taking action point of view of the Trump presidency has been the last 2 weeks, and then you have at the end of the last 2 weeks, he's actually impeached on a couple of articles of impeachment? Are those inextricably linked, or are they random events?
I think that there's, I think that they're linked. I mean, the fact that President Trump's, that his presidency, when historians look back on it, there's no way that they can go and just say, oh, this is just all about impeachment. He was, you know, the fourth president that we went down this road with, the third that was formally impeached. You have the historic USMCA deal. It's yet to be seen how successful this phase one of this deal with China will be. The jobs explosion, all these different, the creation of the Space Force and parental leave, all of these magnificent, huge things that his administration is doing right now, but is completely being glossed over. But I think the American people are recognizing it.
I want to go to what Jillian said, Raheem. From their perspective, it's not just partisanship now. It's shifting to tribalism. It's getting more so. And they would point to the Republicans now solidified around it was a perfect call that, you know, 8 weeks ago, the Romneys and everybody were, there was problems with it. Is she correct?
Yes, but no more correct as it would be to say that about the Democrats, right? There appears to be this political established mindset in the media, you know, from the Jake Tappers of the world, all of these guys, and they point the fingers at the right and they say it's your fault. It's your. I mean, she basically said that to you, right? Just now, Steve. She said she pointed at you. She said it's all your fault, and the Republic is lost at your feet.
That's why I love Jillian.
Right, but I like her. Don't get me wrong. And I wish she was here to defend herself against what I'm about to say. Is that they cannot for a second countenance that it's been their consolidation, their party of Davos, that has tried to take the good elements of partisanship as well as the bad elements of partisanship and hide them beneath this veneer of what they call American democracy. But it's not democracy. It's bureaucracy. It's taking the power out of the hands of the public that votes. It's taking the power out of the politicians that they vote for, and it's putting it into the hands of the career political classes. This isn't American democracy she's defending. It's American bureaucracy she's defending. And I am very...
Just like it was the civil servants in Britain that wouldn't allow Brexit to happen. Brexit never happened because the British civil service decided we don't want Brexit. Right, and we can wait out Theresa May.
And like you say, I wear it as a badge of honor that we instill a partisanship again, because actually what this country was built on and what my country was built on was robust debates in that House of Commons chamber, and there will be robust debates in Congress today.
I was going to say one other thing too, in defense of the conservative hardliners, the Trump allies who are the mean, scary right-wingers who are driving this. If there wasn't a strong Trump support, if there weren't people who had the president's back and were echoing what he was saying and helping to reinforce
we would have caved and
moved on.
Okay, but let's take this point. Is it a robust debate, or do both sides revert back to their talking points? They both revert back to the tribalism, and they're not going to give it. And Trump is the best at this, is saying, I'm not giving an inch. If you see how the direction of the Republicans is, Trump says, a perfect phone call, the pattern of activity beforehand was exactly what I was elected to do. I'm correct, you're wrong, and now the Republicans have come, just like Nancy Pelosi's been kind of dragged over to the more radical elements of the Democratic Party. Is it debate, as Raheem's saying, or are we both back into this highly partisan tribalism where we just revert back to our talking points?
Well, it's been back into there's been this partisan divide ever since the beginning. I mean, 20 minutes after President Trump was sworn in, the first story came out with impeachment mentioned in it. I mean, you look at Al Green in 2017, you look at all these members who literally campaigned on impeachment in the fall of 2018. There's never been a, you know, kind of everyone, hey, let's have this delicate sensibilities and let's have this, you know, debate on the issues. They campaigned and got into office and won the House back on the issue of impeachment.
Okay, let's go. Let's do some housekeeping here, but because today's a huge day. We're live all day. Let's get. Where do people go?
Look, I'm delighted to say that we're approaching our 600,000th download on the podcast, which is absolutely huge numbers given the fact that we started this about 7 weeks ago. This is an extraordinary thing, and we're very grateful for everybody that subscribes, rates us, whatever you want to rate us, 1 to 5 stars, we prefer 5, but if whatever you think, and make sure that you're at warroom.org for all the breaking developments across today.
Okay, War Room Impeachment, episode 78, the historic day that Donald J. Trump will be impeached on 2 articles of impeachment sometime this afternoon, this evening. We'll be back with Jan Brewer in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War and Impeachment, 18 December, year of our Lord 2019, here with Raheem Kassam, Nigel Farage's wingman, the architect of Brexit, and Jason Miller, the senior communication strategist for the 2016 campaign. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, nationwide on the Salem Radio Network, across the globe on America's Voice.news, and of course on cable TV on the fastest growing cable TV news operation, Newsmax TV. We're now honored to be joined by Governor Jan Brewer. And Governor Brewer was one of the earliest and most ardent of the Trump supporters as an elected official. It's a historic day, Governor Brewer. We're here. And did you ever think we'd get here, think we'd get to the place where the House of Representatives would bring two articles of impeachment against the 45th President of the United States?
Absolutely not, and certainly not with any evidence. I mean, this has been just a sham impeachment. It's just absolutely blows my mind away. I can't believe that the Democrats have put on such a dog and pony show. But you know what? I think the general public, they get it. They understand that this is not right. And as we see this movement that is moving this along, the public is moving in another direction. And President Trump's polling numbers are really rising and rising. So it's really going to be huge damage, I think, to the Democrat Party.
You think huge damage?
Yeah, big time.
And Governor, speaking specifically... sorry, Governor, go ahead.
Go ahead, Steve.
Governor, this is Jason. I want to say, speaking specifically
I'm sorry.
No. Hey, and by the way, folks, when I had the opportunity to work with Governor Brewer on President Trump's campaign in 2016, man, she would go into the toughest situations.
Oh, my God.
And the
Governor, this is
debates.
Steve. You are a fire. That's why we wanted to have you on today on impeachment day, because you are the ultimate fire breather.
I mean, it was so great to have the opportunity to work with the governor.
You want to get hit by a blowtorch? Have Jan Brewer show up.
Man, and I will remember to my grave the people who stood there during Access Hollywood weekend and every other tough moment in that campaign and who never backed down, and that was Governor Brewer. But Governor, I want to talk about Arizona for a moment. This is obviously going to be a battleground going into 2020. You're seeing it there.
Yeah.
What kind of insight can you give us as to what's going through the minds of Kyrsten Sinema and Martha McSally, the two U.S. senators right now, as well as maybe some of these freshman members of the delegation? Obviously, we've seen on the Republican side, Debbie Lesko really start to make a name for herself. But what about on the Ann Kirkpatrick, and what are you seeing on the other side of the aisle?
Well, you know, I think Andy Biggs and certainly Debbie Lesko, I mean, they're standing tall. They do their homework, and they know what's right and what's wrong, and they're going to do the right thing. Martha McSally, I believe, is going to, you know, vote no on the impeachment. But I think she's got a tough race ahead of her, which everybody has their eyes on her, because we got to keep that seat in the Republican hands. And certainly we don't want the astronaut taking that seat over, because he would not be good for Arizona, nor would he be good for the country. Kyrsten Sinema is an unknown factor, sort of. She's kind of reinvented herself. And I don't know exactly. She's done some good things. She's tried to show her independence. I, of course, know her from way back when. And that's not the Kyrsten Sinema that I've ever known. She's very, very partisan, very, very liberal. So you're always cautious. I don't know if it's the real deal or it's not the real deal. It'll be interesting today to see exactly how she does vote on the impeachment. I don't have any idea. I think she'll go. I'm going to just go on the record and say I think she'll vote for the impeachment.
Real quickly, we got about 2 minutes here. What advice today? He's always someone would reach out to you. What advice would you give the President of the United States of how to comport himself and how to handle just today? What would you advise the President?
Oh, I think he's doing it just right. I mean, he's keeping busy. He's working for the people of the United States of America. He's got a big rally tonight. And push on, because when this gets over to the Senate, it's not going to happen. I mean, he's not going to be impeached. I mean, he's not going to be convicted. So just push on.
Would you tell him to go for the full trial with witnesses and fact witnesses, or take the quick and dirty acquittal and just move on?
I think he should just quick, down and dirty, and move on. Why give all these people the time and energy to keep rallying all this untruth? Why?
We got about 30 seconds with you, Governor. Can you help us out? What should the deplorables do? What should Trump supporters do starting today?
I think they should be calling every congressman that they know, and those that they don't know, they need to talk to their neighbors, and they need to be out there telling the truth. We are the party of truth tellers. And if we keep saying it, people will finally get the message. And that is what happened. So just standing tall and defending our president of the United States.
Governor, can we ask you, could you stay over for the next segment? Because we're going to jump to a quick commercial break. We've got some more questions we've got to ask you. Would you mind staying over?
If you don't make them tough, yes.
Okay. Okay, this is War Impeachment, Episode 78. It's Impeachment Day. I-Day is here. This is Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. Make sure you go to warroom.org. Raheem, we're up and rolling today with all the news.
We are up and rolling with yesterday's show, all the day's news from this morning, and a whole lot more about to drop on warroom.org.
Okay, Episode 78. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return with Governor Jan Brewer in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
War Room Impeachment, Episode 78. It's the historic day has arrived. It's Impeachment Day. We're here live on Capitol Hill with Governor Jan Brewer.
Governor, this is Jason. I want to go right into a couple of breaking things that have been happening over this last week. We're seeing lawsuits that are trying to stop the construction of the wall there in Arizona along the border. And we're also seeing, with a blaring headline on CNN.com, undocumented immigrants can now apply for driver's licenses in New York State. What's your take on what's going on the immigration front right now?
Oh, my God. It just is so upsetting. I mean, what happened to the rule of law? I mean, this is the United States of America. We have rules and we have laws for a reason. And for these people to move forward thinking that they can just ignore all of this, it's just unbelievable to me. What has our country become to? I will tell you, on Monday, we had illegals shooting on I-10 50 miles south of Arizona. We had a gunfight on Interstate 10 on Monday. With the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol didn't fire, but the illegals were shooting at them. I mean, we need our wall. We need it built, and we need it built quickly.
Do you think, okay, Governor Brewer, do you think that the President Trump is doing enough to make sure the wall is built? I understand he's got, they're fighting him in the courts, they're fighting him in Congress. Do you think, how important is building the wall to his reelection in 2020?
I think it's really important, but people do realize that he has to deal with the with Congress, you know, and they have not been very, very helpful. You know, I've been kind of disappointed in some Republicans that haven't been helpful. I think that he has stood tall, and he's moving fast as he can, given the, you know, what he has to work with. I mean, they have come in, you know. Arizona is really the gateway of all this illegal immigration. I mean, you know, California is pretty well secured. Texas is pretty well secured. We are wide open. They did build the new footage 5 miles or plus, 5 miles plus, I believe, down in Yuma. And that has stopped a lot of it. But they're still wide open here in Arizona, and we need that wall built.
Governor,
he's going to get it done.
Governor,
no one believed him when he said it, but he's doing it. Amen.
The Governor Brewer gave us the idea about building wall. Right before we let you go, just once again, because this show is really a show of the grassroots. You're one of the leaders of this populist nationalist movement throughout the country. What would you tell President Trump's followers? What do they have to do today, and what do they have to do going forward to support the president?
They got to spread the word about what a dynamic president that he has done, that there was no quid pro quo. He's moved forward. He's loved our country. The economy is good. And this impeachment is a sham, and it's outrageous. And to call their Congress people and tell them to vote no.
Governor Brewer, thank you very much for joining us here on War Room Impeachment. Really appreciate these stories will be up today on warroom.org. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.
Governor Jan Brewer from Arizona. Let's reset the day. What's going to happen? Walk through the mechanics for our audience, Jason and Raheem, of what's going to happen today. By the way, this is why Trump's president. The fire breathers that support him, like Brewer.
And by the way, I don't think those butterflies stand a chance in Arizona.
No. don't bring the butterfly to thing. But Brian Kofax, you don't have to worry. It's not going to be butterflies in Arizona.
Don't bring a butterfly to a Jan Brewer fight. That's for sure. So right now, to set the day, obviously you have the House will be voting on these two articles of impeachment. Right now they're voting on, there's a motion to dismiss, which is a kind of a pro forma thing. The party that's out of power always introduces that. Then they're going to have about an hour debate on the rule, which is, again, kind of a pro forma thing.
This always happens.
Then you're going to have 6 hours of debate.
Is there any tactics do you think the Republicans will pull today to try to drive this out of primetime tonight and to drive it into tomorrow morning to delay this? Or do you, what tactics, or do you think this is all pro forma?
The one possible thing tactic-wise would be to try to force a vote regarding making members of Congress stand up and actually be individually identified as they
vote. Let's talk about that vote. Right now, why you're telling me that what you hear is Pelosi's going to have them just hit the buzzer and that's the way it's going to be.
Correct, because there's safety in numbers and there's safety in anonymity.
They want to stay in the tall grass.
Yes, and even though they'll be on the record of voting for
In other words, if they were proud of this, if they thought there was going to be their moment, if they want they want this on Facebook Live, they would all stand and take a vote. This, you think, is signaling to you they want to stay in the tall grass. It's not a popular vote.
Right. What they don't want are Alyssa Slotkin raising her hand and saying, yes, I vote for this article of impeachment. They don't want Steve, your buddy, Anthony Brindisi raising a hand saying, I vote for this article
of impeachment. He crossed
me. He did. And, well, but you know what? He'll have a lot more time to spend with you after this next year because he's not coming back. And
we're going to help him. He's going to assist Vish on the production of the show.
Yes, but pretty sure that Pelosi won't allow that to happen. But again, today it's going to be dominated. It's going to be wall-to-wall coverage of this important moment of these Democrats. You know, kind of reminds me of when Charlton Heston rounds the corner, Point Doom, there in Malibu and realizes, you know, they did it. You know, they blew it all up. I mean, this is where the Democrats crossed the line officially.
Well, Raheem, what media today, how on fire are things, particularly in support of the president?
Support of the president?
So from the right wing media leading off of his tweets, I know he's been on a little bit of a tweet roll.
You caught me out because usually I don't read the right wing media in the morning. I am the right wing media,
mainstream media has basically said this is a historic day. This is the mark of the mark of Cain on him. This is the I word that's going to be tattooed on him. He'll never live this down. This is essentially the end of his presidency.
Yeah, and clicking around the right wing media as you speak there. A lot of people focusing in on the polls. Breitbart's headline is that Trump approval up 6 points since the inquiry began. The Daily Caller is not giving any coverage to impeachment up front.
This is Tucker.
Right,
Tucker
now
just doesn't think it's a big deal.
Yeah,
Tucker is just from the beginning.
This is correct.
It's not a page one story.
The only right wing media, honestly, that I check every day and religiously right now is the Bongino Report, because it aggregates everything. And I'm sorry to say this, so much better than the Drudge Report. Just saying. Just my opinion. Not the opinions of war impeachment. Raheem Kassam's personal opinion.
We got Raheem Kassam, the consultant to the Bongino Report. Dan's doing a great job. But what is talk to us about Bongino Report? What are they doing?
Well, so look, a lot of people saw that Drudge was not necessarily the greatest friend to the president over the last 6 to 8 months, especially, has been pushing a lot of these pro-impeachment headlines, has been pushing a lot of the more liberal cultural stuff. And so Dan Bongino, Fox News contributor and one of the top podcasts in the country, he decided, you know what, I'm going to set up my own one. He set up BonginoReport.com. And, they've linked to warroom.org in their 2 weeks that they've been up a couple of times, and the traffic appears to be fantastic. And the through traffic to us has been fantastic. I much prefer the layout. It's crisp, it's clean, and it actually focuses on the things that we on the right care about.
Real quickly, we're going to go to commercial break. The president, he's on a roll today on Twitter. He's going to lead his defense today, Jason, Raheem?
Yeah.
The president has been on a Twitter spree this morning, and people are going to check all the latest news out at warroom.org.
Okay, episode 78, it's impeachment day. We'll return in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 78, the historic episode. It's impeachment day here in Washington, D.C. We're live from the nation's capital. We're live from Capitol Hill. We're just literally hundreds of yards from where this is going to take place. War Room, Impeachment. Jason Miller, Bill Clinton was doing mea maxima culpas on his day. He was curled up in a knot. Donald Trump, is Donald Trump going to do that?
No, and I think what you're going to see tonight is very similar to the letter that went over from President Trump to Nancy Pelosi yesterday.
A blowtorch.
A blowtorch, yes. It made all of their, they were all melting, just completely melting.
No, the shows last night were incredible. They vapor locked.
They were. And the thing, too, is that I loved is, number one, President Trump was taking a lot of these attacks that were coming at him, putting it right back on the Democrats. But he was very soundly laying his case for how this is unconstitutional, how this is about a foreign policy disagreement, and about how the fact
nullification
that
project.
This is about the nullification. And so there was so much substance in that letter. Was there a lot of hyperbole and some fun in there? You bet, because that goes in.
It's very Trumpian.
Yes, very Trumpian. I think you're going to see that tonight. But here's the thing. You're going to see 10,000 plus packed in that room, another 10,000 plus outside, showing just how big the divide is in the country right now.
Raheem, how do you think this? How do you think this stands today? And you've actually got some reporting that you're going to break here about the opposition inside the Republican Party to President Trump.
Look, I'm so obsessed with this stuff right now that anytime anything comes out, I go into the deep dive and the detail about it. Look at the characters, who they are.
Raheem's the guy that read the 7,000 pages of testimony.
It's true, and I'm living and breathing this stuff right now. So when I see the New York Times release an op-ed yesterday about the anti-Trump Republicans. They say the headline is, "We are Republicans and we want Trump defeated." And I look at the name John Weaver, and I know John Weaver from back on my John Huntsman campaign days in Orlando, Florida. And I remember, wait a minute, I read earlier this year that John Weaver had signed a contract with Rosatom, the state-owned Russian energy company. He was
Uranium One.
He registered as a FARA agent.
Crooked.
And then apparently when it got exposed, he dipped out of the contract and went back to consulting for John Kasich, who's still mulling over running for president. These are the anti-Trump Republicans they find. Remember, we always talk about projection and the cover. These guys are doing it. He's living what Hunter Biden lived. He is grifting off of foreign powers, and he's trying to accuse President Trump of doing that same thing that he's doing.
We're coming up on War Room. You going to put that on warroom.org?
It's going to be up in about 45 seconds.
Jason, before we wrap up here, put this day in perspective in history.
I think it's too early to say what it's going to be in history. Again, if you're the liberal media, they want to have President Trump removed from office right now. This is why defeating this in the Senate is so big, and this is why us winning in 2020 is so big. So we get to write the history book and not the liberal biased media.
Go to warroom.org. As we told you when we started the show, what, 8 or 10 weeks ago, that we're going to be here every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump. We hope it's the exoneration and vindication of Donald J. Trump. But as we told you before, as sure as the turning of the earth, Nancy Pelosi is going to bring a couple of articles of impeachment against Donald J. Trump before Christmas. It's the 18th of December, the year of our Lord, 2019, and today's the day. It is impeachment day. And Donald Trump, by the end of the day, will be impeached as the 45th President of the United States, Stephen K. Bannon. We'll see you in a special edition at 5 o'clock tonight.